This is Sports Sunday with Brad Porter on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
This song kind of makes me think a little bit about the movie Swingers. It's not exactly that type of music, but it's a little bit, isn't it? Like I'm walking into the back door of a club or something like that.
The same feel.
Yeah, exactly. It is Sports Sunday, Sports Radio 810 WHB in Kansas City and across the Midwest. I'm your host, Brad Porter. Jed Marshall is producing as we're live from the Rally House studios. The rain has stopped momentarily, but as Jeff Penner from 41 Action News says, it's not going to rain every hour today. Just some of the hours, apparently. Coming up later in the show, Josh Briscoe is going to join us in studio for a conversation that will or could go a million different directions. And then he will take you into baseball tonight at noon, getting ready for Royals and Yankees series finale at Kauffman Stadium. Royals falling last night 8-3, so the series is now split at a game apiece. At 1 o'clock, Sporting KC against Minnesota United FC live here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. At 3 o'clock, the final whistle with Dave Borchert. Full post-game coverage of Sporting's game. At 4 o'clock, the Baseball Tonight post-game show, approximately. It's whenever the Royals and Yankees get done. Josh Briscoe will take you through that. And then at 7 o'clock tonight, NBA playoffs. Rockets and Warriors, series tied at a game apiece. And joining us now on the Sprint guest line to talk about the NBA is Kurt Heelan from NBCSports.com. Follow him on Twitter, at Basketball Talk. Kurt, how are you this morning?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me on, man.
Absolutely. One thing I want to ask you before we delve into the playoffs here is we had a tweet that kind of sent Kansas City on its ear last week for a good reason. Our good friend Jarrett Sutton, former Missouri Tigers basketball player, now a scout in the NBA. He was at the and a Mavericks guy. He was at the rookie camp in Chicago this past week, okay? And he said an NBA executive told him, Jarrett, going to be real honest with you, Kansas City will get an NBA team at some point. It's a real thing. I've heard from multiple sources, just a matter of time. Seattle and Kansas City, to me, are most valuable markets for league expansion when it makes sense. So, Kurt Heelan, I don't know if you guys talked to the same people or if you've talked to anybody you've heard from who says that Kansas City, as well as Seattle, could be in line for either expansion or a relocation team sometime in the next few years.
I don't know about the next few years. First off, I've heard there's really no appetite among the owners for expansion right now. Mm-hmm. That's just really not on the table. And getting a team to relocate in the next few years is going to be hard. There's just nobody coming up with a lease in a small market that's likely to move. It is possible Kansas City gets a team, but basically you need your billionaire.
That's who, yeah.
That's kind of what it comes to. You need your billionaire to go get a team and bring them there, which is kind of how these things tend to go right now. The league is really high on Seattle. And the other thing that didn't get mentioned there, it sounds strange, they're putting a G League team there, but the league's really high on Mexico City as a possibility right now, just because they see that as tapping another market. But again, that would require the Mexico City billionaire, whoever that person would be, to move the team. So that's kind of where it is. Like, there's just no appetite for expansion. So it's going to come down to a team looking to move. And some of the teams that I thought might be up for it, like Memphis, just their ownership solidified, and nothing's going to be happening there in the next year or two. So I'm not sure where that move comes from in the short term.
Yeah, we talked about it a little bit earlier. You got to get your local billionaire to get involved. Yeah.
So you got this, Jeff. You got it, man.
Yeah, exactly. It's and our guys, we have a couple of billionaires in town, and they spend a lot of money on arts and education and that sort of thing. We have our guys who own Sporting KC, Cliff and Mike Illig, and Rob Heineman, who are good guys. And could they put together? There's a lot of hoops that have to be jumped through, and things have to happen. And like I said, I think
You've got, though, the advantage of, look, you've got the building.
Yes, you've got the building.
Sprint Center, correct, if I'm remembering the name right. But
yes.
Yeah, you've got the building, and you've certainly got a market, frankly, larger than a couple existing markets. So, like, a lot of the pieces are there. It's a city, obviously a city and a state that does love basketball. It's just, at this point, it really does come down to you have to get your billionaire to buy a team and move them.
Yep.
Which is, you know,
Somebody's got to be the first one to raise their hand and said, "Here, sir, I'm down." So,
yeah.
Okay, we'll get into the NBA playoffs here. I know you put some good stuff on your Twitter account and at NBCSports.com. Follow Kurt at Basketball Talk. Celtics Cavs last night. I told Jed Marshall when I walked in. I said, "Well, I had some things going on last night. I took the kids to see Impractical Jokers, the live show, which I recommend if you're into that. But if you're not, don't." So I said, "Well, Jed, I missed some of the game. I taped it, but I didn't watch all of it." And Jed said, "You didn't miss anything," which was, I know the Celtics were up 2-0, but you're going to Cleveland. The Celtics have been not good on the road in these playoffs, and it's LeBron James. But everything that could go wrong for Boston last night absolutely went wrong, right for Cleveland.
I think. Right. Well, yeah, you had to expect desperate Cleveland at this point, right? I mean, they were down 2-0. You knew that they were going to, and they can't go down 3-0. They were going home. They were going to come out with desperate energy. They could not afford to lose this game, and they did play harder, first off, and especially on the defensive end. They contested more shots. Their switching was less abysmal. But Boston also just missed some shots they normally make. They weren't as sharp. I don't know if this was a case of their ego getting a little big or if it was just, they coasted a little and got shell-shocked by how hard Cleveland came out. I think game four is going to be far more telling for this series, whether Cleveland's really back in it or not, because Cleveland knows they can't go down 3-1 either.
Right.
They've still got to find a way to – they've still got to figure out how to win one in Boston. They certainly can't afford to drop one at home. So they're going to come out hard again. I just think you're going to see a much sharper Celtics team. And after watching the first two games, can you picture Cleveland putting together another good defensive game?
No. I haven't seen the back-to-backs. No.
Yeah, exactly. I'm just – you tell me that they're going to put together four good quarters of defense, and I'm like, yeah, sure they are. So, it's not impossible, and they still have LeBron, but I think game four is far more telling for where this series is at.
All right, we're talking to Kurt Helin here on Sports Sunday, Sports Radio 810 WHB. He joins us on the Sprint guest line. One telling thing about the Cavaliers last night, and I heard this discussion yesterday, was one of the pregame shows. They were talking about, Cleveland, the other players on the Cavaliers not named LeBron James need to understand that they can't sit around and wait for LeBron to do everything. He can't have a triple-double every night. Somebody else has to play. So LeBron last night, 27 points, respectable. 12 assists, 5 rebounds, so didn't have the triple-double. But a little more even distribution. You get 13 from Love, you get 13 from Hill, you get 10 from Todd. Kyle Korver comes off the bench for 14. I think he's been pretty good in these playoffs. So they got a more evenly balanced thing, and guys were not doing the sit around and wait for LeBron to do everything that they had been doing before.
No, they've been like that at home a little bit. But, yeah, look, they need George Hill. They need J.R. Smith in a game. They need Korver and Love. I mean, they need, like you said, balance. They had a couple good games from Love, and Korver's had a couple good games in the playoffs, but they needed some balance from the rest of that roster, and they got it for a night. I think Hill is in a lot of ways a bellwether for them, just because he's a guy who can actually defend. and he was making some plays, and I think if he's going, it's a better sign for them. So, again, I think they did that at home. For one game, but now let's see him sustain it. Let's see them actually pull that off for two games in a row.
And for the Celtics, I mean, this was a big punch in the face because before game two, Marcus Morris came out, and I don't think he was saying anything, saying this maliciously, but he said, I think I'm the best in the league at guarding LeBron. And it wasn't saying I'm better than LeBron or I'm going to shut down LeBron, but he did a good job against LeBron. Yeah. And maybe the other Celtics saw that performance and thought, bah, we're going to walk all over Cleveland if Marcus Morris keeps doing this. And then Marcus doesn't do anything on offense, basically, last night, 9 points. Al Horford was locked out almost all night last night. So this was a big punch in the face if they had any thoughts that they were going to stomp all over the Cavaliers.
I think so. And look, Terry Rozier had said after the game, we needed to get our butts kicked. And accuracy to that, I think there was some – they're not as bad as the Warriors with their ability to go, we got this. The ego isn't quite that big yet, but it has its moments. And I think just like we've seen this in a lot of sports, like you can do nothing but praise a team. And you watch them play well for 3 or 4 weeks in a row in football season, and all of a sudden you're like, uh-oh. You know, it's like, uh-oh, they're playing too well. Everybody's saying nothing but nice things about them. They're not showing any flaws. And you're like, oh, they're ripe for a letdown. And I think that that's what this was. I think that they were not as sharp. They missed some early shots, and it just seemed to get in their heads, and they seemed to get a little just – they just seemed like, uh-oh, it's one of those off nights. And they just weren't quite as sharp with their passing, handling the ball pressure. I mean, Cleveland pressured the ball better, and they can handle that. They just didn't in this game. But, you know, that's what they've got to bounce back from. It gave Brad Stevens a few things to work with in the film room today.
It's interesting you brought up that Rozier said we kind of needed to get our butts kicked. And on the opposite side of that is Bill Self, head coach of the Kansas Jayhawks. He gets asked this every year because they roll out to a, you know, whether it's a 10-0 starter, 12-0 starter, conference play, they're rolling. Then they lose. And inevitably, somebody said, was it a good loss? Did you kind of need to lose? And he always says, no, I don't want to lose ever. But that's over a 30-35 game course that you're talking about, not over the short NBA playoffs, or as you mentioned, the NFL, a very short NFL season.
Exactly. I don't think Brad Stevens didn't want to lose, but he can afford to give this. They can afford to give this one up for the message that it sends to the team about where they have to be focus wise. And look, this is true throughout the playoffs, and this is still a young Boston team figuring stuff out. The deeper you go, the more intense it gets, the more desperate teams get. And frankly, in the case of Cleveland, they're pretty talented still. That LeBron guy's still pretty good at basketball. Like it was,
yes.
They were going to come out with. They're going to come out with this crazy energy, and you've got to be able to match it, and they didn't for a game. Now it's a matter of them getting back to where they do match it.
All right, we're talking with Kurt Heland, NBCSports.com, joining us on the Sprint Guest Line, talking NBA playoffs here on Sports Sunday. All right, tonight's game, Game 3 between the Warriors and Rockets, which we'll have live here on Sports Radio 810 WHB, 7 o'clock Central Time. Series tied 1-1, and it's been, I guess, blowout city both ways. You mentioned the Warriors at points during the regular season. They take the foot off the pedal, and you know, either they're up in a game and they think, we got this, or they think, yeah, we can lose 3 or 4. We're still going to be a great seed. It's fine. Did the Warriors take their foot off the pedal in this one, or was it more of the Rockets and James Harden saying, we need to go out and kick somebody in the ass and let them know that we're here to play, and we're not. This isn't going to be a free ticket to the finals for the Warriors?
I think that it was kind of a combination. I think you did get a much better Houston team. And I think if you get on top of, and this has been their pattern for, frankly, a couple of years, if you get on top of Golden State early, then you can kind of hold them down for a bit, and just you've got to withstand their attempt at a run. There's always one. And if you can kind of hold that off, then they try to get it all back at once. They get a little frustrated, and they fold the tent. And I think Houston played the blueprint of what they have to do to win in this series. They were much sharper defensively. I mean, in game one, Klay Thompson took 18 shots. 14 of them were uncontested. You probably don't want to do that.
It was awful.
Second or third best shooter in the game. They did much better on their switches. They're much better on their ball pressure, which, by the way, forced miss. It was cyclical. Like, you force a miss, then we can get out and run a little bit, get started earlier in the clock with our offense rather than waiting until there's 7 seconds left to kind of attack. And that, you know, left more options for passes. And then plus guys just knocked down shots. They did a much better job with that blueprint, but I think that was one of those Golden State games where they just, hey, we got this, man. We took the first one. They're going to fold like Toronto. Oh, wait, they didn't fold. I think you're going to get a much better Warriors team at home. Plus, I think the Super Bowl-length break between these games is good for – it was good for LeBron last night. It's good for Steph Curry and his knee. Like, I think he'll be a little sharper in this one, too.
We're talking with Kurt Heland, NBCSports.com, on our Sprint Guest Line. One of the other things I liked about Game 2 in this series between the Rockets and Warriors was I like when the game gets dirtied up a little bit. Guys start talking trash. Guys start, you know, kind of banging bodies down the floor. And I really liked Chris Paul kind of taking it upon himself to kind of get a little feisty, talk some trash, and physically get in the faces of some of the Warriors players. And maybe the Warriors didn't respond very well to that. And Chris Paul getting a little bit down in the dirt was a good thing for the Warriors, for the Rockets.
Yeah, well, that is who Chris Paul is. I mean, he doesn't wear it on his sleeve in a, I don't know, Kobe Bryant, Kevin Garnett kind of way. He is as competitive or as anybody in the league. And, like, he drives his teammates. I mean, it was part of the problem with the Clippers. Like, he was just – he's usually right, but he's just picking his teammates apart constantly. And he's playing this – he's playing chess out there, and he just gets in people's faces. But he also grates on his teammates. But he grates on – he does that to opponents. He talks a lot of trash. He does get – you know, that's why there was that – Chris Paul was at the heart of that Clippers-Warriors rivalry that I don't know how much – I guess rivalry in the – they fought. They didn't like each other. I don't know. It was pretty one-sided.
Yes.
On the court. But I think that some of that Chris Paul got back into that game, and that was good for the Rockets. They needed a little bit of that. They need that guy who can push them when, you know, James Harden's having an off night, or he obviously didn't in that game. But, like, what he brings as a secondary creator and just kind of his mental toughness was good for them in this game. And this is another case where, all right, that was really well done. Now you've got to, in their case, execute this on the road against what will be a better rested Warriors team. And can you do that again when the real pressure's on?
And what I like about this series, you mentioned going back home to Golden State. What I like about this matchup is, I mean, the Warriors are a great team at home, 29-12. But the Rockets are one of the best road team in the NBA. They're 31-10 away from home.
And yeah, they are a team that plays really well away from. They've been really. I mean, they were the best team in the NBA regular season wise. I mean, they had the best record. They were winning home. They were winning on the road, and they were doing they were bringing more focus night in and night out, which is something honestly they needed to do. Just like, you know, one of the talks about this series a lot is just how both teams switch a lot, and the Warriors are pretty smooth at it because they've been doing it for about a couple of years now. As just their part of their core defense, and it's not what Houston did till this year. But they brought intensity every night this year, and they switched everything all year long, on and off the ball. Frankly, against teams that shouldn't have been switching, they kept doing it because they knew this is what they needed in this series. They were looking ahead to Golden State from day one, and they knew, like, you've got to be able to be switchable, or if you don't switch, their ball movement will ultimately just cut you apart. And they got pretty smooth at it. And they didn't show it in game one. They did in game two. But again, now doing it on the road is the real test in this set. And they did it all year long. I think it's going to, you know, this might be a case where game three is, I like the Warriors in this one. I like them getting home, getting more out of their role players. And in sort of a Cleveland sense, I don't think it's going to be that kind of blowout. But in a Cleveland sense, if their role players are a little more comfortable, they're rested, it's good for them. But game four, I think game four is going to be the Avengers Thanos game of this series, where it's going to be brutal.
All right, you're listening to Sports Sunday, Sports Radio 810 WHB in Kansas City. I am Brad Porter. We're talking with Kurt Heelan from NBCSports.com on our Sprint guest line. Follow Kurt at Basketball Talk. All right, a couple of final things, and I'll wrap you up, Kurt. I appreciate your time today. Is there any reason, and I heard the national shows yesterday go into this, is there any reason we should be talking about where LeBron's going next season? Because LeBron and his inner circle are maybe the most tight-lipped group of athletes and entourages I've ever seen. No word ever leaks out as to what he's going to do. So is it just not worth talking about until he makes a decision? Because honestly, nobody knows. There's no leaks. There's no new information here.
Yeah, pretty much everything you hear right now is speculation. And I can guarantee you that his people, Rich Paul, Maverick Carter, the other people, those are the names people know, but the people in his rather small, tight circle, that you're right, they don't leak, but they've also started to lay out whatever the plans are. Whatever, there has been discussion within that group. They do have some idea of what they're thinking. And they are starting to, they have started to lay some groundwork, and I'll tell you, if LeBron gets out early, that just gives him more time to actually get in on the groundwork of this. But right now, I think you're right in that, in all honesty, it's speculation. We can speculate about, you know, the Laker name is out there, although that doesn't make a lot of sense to me unless you want to be on the third best team in the West at best. Philadelphia is interesting. Houston, for capologists, Houston's fascinating only because they totally have to gut the team to make that work.
Right.
It's fun to speculate about it, but you're right, in all honesty, like, the only people who really know are not talking. Like, if somebody says they know LeBron's inner circle is doing X, they don't really know.
Mm-hmm.
Not yet.
The other ridiculous thing I hear tossed around is, well, if he stays in Cleveland, he can get the max deal and get the most money. He's worth $1 billion, and he makes five times his salary from endorsements. The final money is not the reason he would stay in Cleveland. So I'm just going to end
that. He's also not taking a disc. He's not going to take a discount, but he's not.
No.
Honestly, I'll tell you, it's the difference to me mentally between everybody talks about Kawhi Leonard getting traded, and if you talk to people around the league, talk to people closer to the Spurs, that's like, I'll call it 50-50. I'll call that a coin toss. The reason I think that gets worked out is he doesn't make that kind of money off the court, and he's not going to walk away from the $219 million Supermax LeBron. The $4 or $5 million, the money he would make even in any year in leaving Cleveland or staying isn't enough to get him to stay. He'll max out somewhere. He'll be fine. That you're right. That's not the big deal for LeBron. What's going to matter is where he thinks he can win. Now, that said, he might sign a 1+1 with Cleveland because he looks at his other option and goes,
Yeah,
I need to wait a year.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, Kurt, I thank you so much for joining us, and we'll look forward to Warriors and Rockets tonight, 7 o'clock Central Time. It's live here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. I appreciate your time, and enjoy the rest of your Sunday.
You too, man. Stay dry.
All right. Appreciate it. Thank you very much. Kurt Helan from NBCSports.com joining us on the Sprint Guest Line. You can follow him on Twitter at Basketball Talk. He writes a lot of good stuff about the NBA. And as he mentioned at the beginning of the discussion, NBA coming back to Kansas City, still a long ways to go to get that to happen, but not impossible. So we will take a quick time out here. Josh Briscoe is coming up at some point in the second half hour of the show. He's coming in next. Okay, Josh Briscoe is ready to come in next. He's getting ready to host baseball tonight at noon, and then Sporting KC and Minnesota United FC at 1 o'clock. Quick time out. You're listening to Sports Sunday. My name is Brad Porter. Jed Marshall is producing as we're live in the Rally House studios on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
This is Sports Sunday on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Charging into our final half hour here on Sports Sunday, Sports Radio 810 WHB. I'm Brad Porter. Jed Marshall is producing as we're live in the Rally House studios. Rain has stopped at least for the moment. Don't know if it'll affect the game or not. Josh Briscoe, ESPN Kansas City and host of Baseball Tonight here on Sports Radio 810 WHB, joins us on the show. And Josh, Jed and I were talking earlier about Danny Duffy. We played the soundbite. He says, I stank. I was awful. I don't like doing this. And we had to bleep out part of it.
He used a curse.
He used a curse word. How dare he? But he takes full ownership. And so I began my speculation. When do we see the announcement that he's going to move to the bullpen? Because the other thing Danny Duffy said is, I'm not coming up with a phantom injury and going on the DL, which we see all the time in Major League Baseball. Guy's going bad. All of a sudden, he's got tightness in his lower back or tightness in his shoulder. Rustin Dodd from The Athletic, out covering the Royals this morning, just tweeted this out about Ned Yost. Ned Yost said Danny Duffy will make his next start as planned. He's remaining mum on his ideas to get him going. He has some, he says, but he's not saying. But it will not include a bullpen stint or missing a start. So Danny Duffy, for now, is not going anywhere. And you said this last week. He's the most compelling, interesting story on the Royals.
Absolutely.
Regardless of what happens.
Mm-hmm. Reading that quote from Ned is kind of funny. The idea that, like, he's remaining mum on his ideas to get him going. He has some, he says. It sounds like a high school kid who's, like, mom keeps asking, like, when are you doing this report? Like, have you been working on it? Like, have you read the book yet? It's like, yeah, mom, I've got it. I've got a plan. I'll figure it out. Like, don't worry about it. And then, the report's due, and all of a sudden, Danny Duffy's starting again next week. Like, what is – I think the tweet is framing it as, like, the plan for Duffy doesn't include a bullpen stint or missing a start this time. I'm thinking that's implied, but maybe as far as Ned's concerned, like, Duffy to the pin or missing a start is just, like, not an option. It's strange to me, but, who are we to doubt Ned Yost?
Well, Josh, we were talking about, if you go and look at the 40-man roster, even down in Omaha, even Double-A, the options are so limited.
No, it's terrible. No, yes, that's no question. My thought is, I don't care about the rotation at all because I don't care about this season or, like, in a large way, like maybe, like, this team, because that's not what it's about. The thing that I'm concerned with is Danny Duffy. So, yeah, like, Brad Keller getting the next start and Duffy's slot does not make the team better, but maybe it makes Duffy better because maybe he gets into a mindset of being an everyday player and you know coming out and pitching one or two innings a few times a week as opposed to just coming out and having to get so into his head about a start. Get him out there in some like very low leverage situations and then maybe some high leverage situations out of the pen. That makes sense to me. I don't know if it's a fix, but it makes sense.
Ned Yost also said, another reporter asked a follow-up question about the bullpen option for Duffy, and Ned Yost says, that's not happening. He's a major league starter. And here's the thing. This is what I talked about earlier. The last two starts were just awful. The nine runs and then the five runs last night. He's at 90 pitches into the fourth inning.
Yeah, it's terrible.
I'm not sure what Cal Eldred or Ned Yost or the analytics guys or the video guys or Danny Duffy himself, I'm not sure what they're going to look at in terms of video and say, that's it. Mm-hmm. I'm banging my heel on my delivery. I've become a heel banger like Danny Bautista. There's an old reference for you.
I'll just nod and pretend I knew exactly what
he was a guy who could do everything, but he couldn't stop banging his heel and he was out of baseball pretty quick. So they're not. I don't think they're going to see one thing on video and say, "Okay, this was really good," or "This is really bad." There's enough evidence this season to see that. And Danny says, "I'm throwing 95, 96. I'm not hurt. Leave my change up in the zone. I'm not. I don't know what the magic fix is."
Yeah, and that's the thing about it that I think has to be especially discouraging for Duffy. Which, like, at this point, you don't want your pitcher in this headspace to continually like spiral further. But, like, I understand why he would, because you hear him explain it, which, by the way, I think is great. Like, the way that he's been talking about it has been fascinating to me. Also, the response to it has been fascinating, if not terribly predictable. There's not a mechanical issue. It's not even on a specific pitch. Like, there was some talk last night about, well, wait, was it this or this or this? Like you just said, Duffy's like, hey, this is working. But whenever I miss a pitch, I miss it really badly, and it ends up in the fountains.
Right.
Like, that's where he's at, and that's hard to fix. That is so amorphous. Like, yeah, my bad pitches are really bad. My good stuff can be okay still, but boy, if I really hang one, it's gone. Like, yeah, that's just, to me, that sounds like a pitcher, not that this is the case here, but that sounds like a pitcher that's just, like, done. Mm-hmm. You're like, I can't control my worst, I can't keep my worst pitch from to just even bring it back to being a not very good pitch. I'm not saying that Duffy is done. I think that's a really big swing, you know, relatively still, I guess, early in this season and also in a season that's already lost for the Royals. But that's a really bad sign to me. There's not a thing to work on other than I've been bad.
Mm-hmm. And I looked at it earlier. I made a comparison, and I said this is completely not fair, but this is, if I'm looking from 30,000 feet or down the tunnel at 2 years from now, the Royals went through this with Jeremy Offelt. Jeremy didn't have quite the talent that Danny Duffy has, the natural talent. He's really good. He was really good. Mm-hmm. They really wanted him to be a starter, and he had issues with blisters and things. So it was starter, bullpen, couldn't decide. Okay, we're going to trade him off. I think he got traded to the Reds initially and then ended up with the Giants and won a couple of World Series there. May have stopped at the Rockies, too. Somebody with those other teams said, no, you're a bullpen guy.
Right.
And he was one of the best non-closers in Major League Baseball for a good stretch of time. And I just see similarities with Danny Duffy to where eventually they're going to be thinking he needs to go to the bullpen, and then eventually that's what he's going to be. And I hate that because I love the kid.
Yeah,
I want
sure.
him to be a starter. He's a good starter, but not right now.
Right. No, we haven't seen that literally like at all this year. Like the win came with 10 runs in the first inning. Like that. Like,
and he still gave up 5.
Right. It was not a good outing. It's interesting, and I wonder if that kind of looking down the tunnel perspective, I wonder if that's the reason that Ned just like isn't willing to entertain the idea of actually moving him to the bullpen. Because once you open that, then that's a conversation that you have to start having. And then maybe that's even deeper into his head, going, oh, man, now maybe I am a bullpen guy. And also, like, Major League Baseball, not to mention the Royals specifically, but Major League Baseball in general could always use more starting pitchers. And the stuff we've seen from Duffy has been not just, like, replacement level, but has been in a good rotation, number two guy stuff. We've seen that from Duffy pretty consistently. But this year has just been, I mean, a complete total loss. Mm-hmm. And again, that's the thing that I think you have to be a little bit nervous about is just like what's the problem? And if you can't identify it, how do you fix it?
Right. And we're talking with Josh Briscoe here on Sports Sunday, Sports Radio 810 WHB. And he's coming up with baseball tonight at noon. I think Mike Boddicker may have brought this up on the Border Patrol earlier this week. Mm-hmm. Pile up all the things that have happened over the last few months for Danny Duffy. Mm-hmm. One, the team that he was a part of that won a World Series was basically destroyed.
Yep.
Aside from Mike Moustakas and Salvador Perez mm-hmm. and Alex Gordon. But that team is gone.
Yep.
Then in the offseason, the trade talks start up, mm-hmm. and Danny Duffy's name starts getting out there. And Danny goes right to Twitter. Mm-hmm. Love the Royals. I want to be in Kansas City. Mm-hmm. I don't want to go anywhere. I can almost guarantee he made a phone call to Dayton Moore saying, no. Mm-hmm. I want to be here. So all that, you had that starting in the offseason. Mm-hmm. Go through spring training. It's whatever it is. It's spring training. Then he comes out of his last start. Oh, no, is Danny Duffy hurt? We all thought that. At least I did.
Mm-hmm.
Thought, oh, no, he's hurt. Goes into the season. The team is not playing well. He's not pitching well. Every night he comes out publicly and owns it. But eventually when you start saying out loud over and over again, I'm terrible, I'm awful, this is unacceptable, then you're going out to the mound thinking, oh, my gosh. And look, whatever your career choice is, you're a great ad-lib guy, mm-hmm. great radio guy. When I was in television, I had both. We had ad-lib and we had teleprompter. Some mm-hmm. people were good at one. Mm-hmm. Some people were good at the other. Some people are not good at either. Mm-hmm. Some people are great at both. Mick Schaefer is one of the best. I thought I was pretty good at it. But for people who really struggle, especially with the ad-lib part of it, you have a terrible show. You cannot ad-lib, change mm-hmm. topics on the fly. Mm-hmm. Then you think, God, I can't ad-lib.
Right.
Then what happens when you're doing a teleprompter show and the teleprompter goes out? Because that happens.
Right.
Can you keep going?
Just be icicle.
You melt that and...
Like, ooh, that's interesting. You went for melt. I went for freeze.
Yes.
Okay. Something happens to your water.
Yes. It's
an element. Turn into a cloud of steam.
Yes. The properties of H2O.
Yes. I think we
pick different properties.
They're a plasma state. I don't think that exists for water. Now I'm out.
But if you're walking out to the mound with the idea, oh my God, it's already in your head.
Yep.
All these things have piled up for the last few months.
And you skipped getting arrested for a DUI.
Right.
Like that.
I did skip over that.
We just passed over that. Again, you get deep enough into a guy's head, and especially whenever you're talking about, I want to be in Kansas City, and then the feeling, there's something that's been coming up in his post-game audio the last handful of times, last handful of starts out. He goes, man, I stink. I'm letting the team down. I feel that. I hate that I'm letting the team down. I'm sick of this bleep. excuse me. You get that from Duffy consistently. Well, I think he's going to have had similar feelings back from the DUI. Like, man, I let the team down and the city down and the community down and people that looked at me. It seems like it has been a really brutal stretch of letdowns from Duffy's perspective. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to tell Danny Duffy if he's let down a city. But it sounds like from his perspective, mm-hmm. he feels that way. Like he has said as much. And that's a lot of weight to put on your own shoulders. And also, it's largely undeniable. The DUI happened. This bad season is in the midst of happening. It is letting down the team and the fan base in the city. And if you get that just eating away at you, you've got to find some way to maybe this is the optimism. He's got to find a break. Mm. And if there's a moment of the bubble pops and all of a sudden, oh man, I went 8 innings, gave up 2 runs, we won 4-2. I didn't get blasted. I had a couple bad pitches, but I wasn't punished for them. All right. I'm on solid ground for a moment.
Right.
Maybe that's the jump start. Maybe the car battery is dead and he needs a jump, but he hasn't gotten that for months and months and months. Mm-hmm. And that's brutal. Like that wears you down, and the more you just sit there trying to turn the key over, the more juice you're sucking out of the battery. And I feel like that's where he's at right now.
And that's why I was speculating earlier that maybe a trip to the bullpen would be forthcoming. But as we said earlier, Ned Yost said, no, he's a major league pitcher. He's not going to the bullpen right now. But, you get him in a bullpen. You get him into the middle innings of a game where he can pitch 2 and 3 innings. Mm-hmm. Maybe he's stacked up against a lot of left-handed bats.
Mm-hmm.
And you string together a week and a half, 2 weeks worth of good stuff.
Yeah.
And then put it back out in the starting rotation.
And then again, what if that doesn't come?
Yeah, I know.
What if he's out there for a week? Because I agree with you. I think at this point, give him a week in the bullpen and just let him try that. But the other side, maybe this is also where Ned's coming from, you put him out in the bullpen for a week or two, and it's still not coming, and he's getting rocked in the first inning, and he doesn't have a chance to try to, you know, recalibrate. He's out there, he gives up two runs in the seventh, all of a sudden the game is over, he's taking another loss. He put out, you know, 30 pitches, and none of them were great. Like, then what happens? Then is it the Phantom DL stint? He doesn't want to do it. Ned said he's not going to put him there. But then what? Do you just pull him out of the rotation? Well, is that even worse? Like, so I, as much as my inclination is to say, like, give him a bullpen run, let him see what happens there, I also understand, like, hey, we don't want to continue to try to, like, put him in easier situations to have him fail there also, because then the weight gets even heavier and heavier and heavier, and eventually, like, you start worrying about losing a pitcher, like, completely. And it just, that would be such an unceremonious way for this story to wrap up. And I don't feel like we're at the end of the story, but it's not good,
we're reaching
obviously.
We're reaching a signpost where a decision has to be made.
I would think so.
And this happened, too. This start last night happens the day after Jacob Junis goes out. And look, he didn't dominate the Yankees, but he held Sanchez and Judge and Didi Gregorius and Gary Sanchez and Brett Gardner, held them in check for the most part. And the runs on his ERA were inherited runners, but that's his job, is to keep guys up. He wasn't fantastic, but he was pretty good against the dominant lineup.
He was good. Good. A shrug is like, that's something to write home about right now. If Eric Skoglund is good with a shrug today, post-game show will be a party. Like, Royals lose 6-2, but only one of those was Skoglund's fault, and he got through seven. Hell yeah, party time. Like, that's where we're at right now. So, yeah.
Skoglund's been a little better, too. So.
Oh, yeah. He's been an interesting candidate this season. We'll talk about him more on Baseball Tonight pregame starting at noon.
There we go. Got to get the plugs in.
Got to.
I've read some of the analytics, and Skoglund's changed the percentages of the kinds of pitches he throws, and that's worked out. But, again, noon for that. We'll take a quick timeout, and maybe we'll talk about one more time. We'll talk about maybe the NBA to come into Kansas City and what Josh Briscoe thinks about that.
Can you hear me rubbing my hands together?
Yeah. All right, we'll take a quick timeout. This is Sports Sunday. My name is Brad Porter. Jed Marshall is producing, and we're live in the Riley House Studios. Back after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
This is Sports Sunday with Brad Porter on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
This ensures that the final 15 minutes of today's show are going to be funky. Absolutely. This is Sports Sunday, Sports Radio 810 WHB in Kansas City. I am Brad Porter. Jed Marshall is producing here in the Rally House Studios. Josh Briscoe is here. Should we just let this track roll for the last 15? Put it on a loop for 15 minutes?
Yeah, at the very least, like, we might just need to get out of the way.
Yeah.
Because funky is the only word that works for that intro.
Yes.
Like, that is funky exclusively.
Yes.
If you 100%. Guys like it, you can go to my Twitter feed, at JedRow24, and see all of the songs I played today.
That's right. I like
hashtag
that. I saw you put
Sports
the
Sunday playlist.
Yeah.
That is shameless, that Jed. Also very good. I'm upset.
I have no shame, Josh.
No, I know.
You know me.
I do. I haven't even plugged my Twitter handle. I'll save it and just scream it at somebody. It'll be like one of those, you know, those little critter books, or like Berenstain Bears books.
Oh, yeah.
In some of the illustrations, they'll have like a little spider hidden in somewhere.
You got to find
it. You have to find it. So whenever like we're just having a conversation, and then I'm a foot away from the mic going, at JB Briscoe. Like, oh, was that it? Was that, did I just do it? Was that the little ladybug, or was that a example?
How many? You got a last name that I'm guessing gets misspelled 90% of the time.
100% of the time, by Jed.
Of the time. Okay, like Jed.
Jed has spelled it wrong 100% of the time.
We've only worked together for what, 9 months?
I don't know. Yeah, sure. And it's not like my name is like attached to all of my tweets and everything, or all of the
emails,
show stuff I do, or emails or anything like that. Is my name? Does my name have an E on the end in your phone, Jed?
No, I actually changed it.
Okay,
in
there. Good. Thank goodness.
Well, fortunately, I don't have that problem. Brad Porter, that's
good.
That's butter on a piece of bread,
yeah.
With two slices of bread, having a butter sandwich. My name is a butter sandwich.
It's got a good bounce to it, though.
It does.
That three-syllable thing is good.
It's quick. It's to the point.
Yeah. It's easy to spell.
When I started in broadcasting many years ago, I was going to change my last name and give it a little pep.
Oh, interesting.
I was going to go I was going to go with Christopher as my last name. I was going to be Brad Christopher.
Oh, two first names is always a crowd pleaser.
It is. It was big in my head. I had it built up in my head. I was going to go to the boss. My first time I get on the air, I'm going to go by Brad Christopher. And then somebody else said, no, you're not. I said, why? Well, Brad Porter is simple.
Right.
And it is your actual name.
Is Christopher your middle name?
Yes.
Okay, good. Yes. It would have been weird if you would have just...
No, like Brad Dennehy.
Right.
So I have a friend who does acting and modeling here, and he has a buddy who he knows like through the scene, and his name is, I don't know, Josh Smith or whatever, but his stage name is Turner Bayetto.
Oh, so good.
So
wow,
good.
Wow, that's some effort.
That is
yeah,
really
he
good.
He really went out. I don't think he'd be listening. If he is, hey, what the hell.
That's
but,
some effort.
I don't know this guy, but yeah, I always think it's funny when I'm like, wow, that's really trying hard.
Tom Cruise, his real last name is like Mapathor or something. It's like really long. And
well, it does sound right with the Scientology.
Yeah.
Really, that sounds like a god.
So Tom Cruise, he's got a different last name. Scientology. I'm not going to go down that route.
Oh, we could.
Not enough time.
Thomas Cruise Mapother the Fourth.
Yeah. How about that? That's quite a handle.
Mapother. It sounds like a god of Scientology in Scientology or like a superhero, like a D-list Marvel comic.
Tom Cruise with Anthony Edwards and Thomas Mapother the Fourth.
Fourth. Yes. Yeah. Very good. Or Tom Cruise is
Mapother.
There you go. Well, I think he changed it
because he's terrible?
His dad was... I think his dad left their family early,
oh, good.
So
okay,
he
good.
Hated his dad.
Great.
So turned to Scientology, which was, anyway. Hey, you want to talk NBA coming to Kansas City?
I kind of want to talk Scientology, but
I've got so much old crap that I keep from my childhood, and I got this trunk in the basement that's full of baseball cards and stuff, but I put stickers all over it.
Okay.
One of them is just the old Kansas City Kings logo.
Right.
Just basic.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was one that says, Cotton Fitzsimmons for King. He was the head coach at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Not for president.
Mm-hmm.
Cotton Fitzsimmons for King.
King.
And now with you talk this NBA talk, Jared Sutton sent out this tweet mm-hmm. that executives think Kansas City and Seattle. And I flipped out. I'm mm-hmm. First night out on the floor. First of all, we're going to buy the Kings name from Sacramento, and they can go be the... we're going to end up living in the ocean soon when the next earthquake happens.
Oh, that's good. That'll look great on a jersey.
Yeah. Well,
I would rock that
yes.
daily.
So we get the Kings name and logo back. Then the first night out, we're bringing out Otis Birdsong. We're bringing out Sam Lacy. Ernie Grunfeld, mm-hmm. you're coming too. Mike D'Antoni played for the Kings. Bring him up
that's
here.
That's good.
Bring all these guys. Phil Ford. Come on. Let's go. All these guys. Scott Wedman, if you want to come, you're welcome. And let's go.
I think the only thing I want to add, I have some specifics here.
Okay.
Me and Kent Swanson writes for Arrowhead Pride, but he's
yes.
also an NBA nerd. We've been fleshing out this idea the last few days. We went through kind of an expansion draft, and he gave me a few names.
Oh, I saw this tweet.
This
back
starting,
and forth. Oh boy,
this starting roster. Give me Lance Stephenson, Jeremy Lin, Zach Randolph, Cole Aldrich. Trade for Frank Mason. Go get Michael Porter Jr. Go get Sfi. Tell me that's not selling out every day. That is.
It's not.
That is perfect. I would watch that team. Every single game. I would watch replays of that team whenever they weren't actually playing on that day. But we're not done yet. General manager is Sam Hinkie. We're going to have the process
absolutely.
Two. Process
absolutely.
Two, electric boogaloo. Also, head coach, Bill Self.
Ooh.
How about that? How about it?
You just spun the track back like, I didn't see that one coming.
He's making the NBA jump, but he doesn't even have to move. He's going to get a raise. He's going to get to be a part of this NBA process here.
That team still stinks.
It's an expansion team. The expansion team is going to stink. And then, you know, whenever they actually get into the draft, then you can have actual draft picks and whatnot. But, oh, I mean, I love the idea, obviously. Also, obviously, it's not going to happen soon.
No.
But I do have this line of thinking for the optimism, which is, like, such a twist from my usual perspective. I found optimism in this because I think, obviously, the NBA is in a great place right now. Like, it is growing, it is exciting, and it
TV
is growing.
TV contract is awesome.
It's fantastic. It's growing with the exact right demographics. The NBA is in a great place right now, and I would say a great place to expand. Also, Seattle is getting a team. Period. Full stop. Like,
yes.
Seattle is getting a team.
Yes.
The thought that I would have is, if I was the NBA, I'd be wanting to get Seattle that team as soon as possible. Let's pep this up. Mm-hmm. It'll be a couple years before they can be even decent. It'll be a couple years before they can get a team on the court. So, you know, if it's announced tomorrow this is happening, you're probably looking at 4 or 5 years, I would think, before you're not the worst team in the league.
Well, the Las Vegas Thunder ruined that for everybody, right?
Golden Knights.
The Thunder moving.
They used to have a minor league hockey team
called the Thunder.
Good. No, right. And so the NHL is just, you know, a different animal.
Yeah.
But so that's going to take some time. If I'm looking to grow in Seattle, I want that started now. I want to get that moving. And the NBA, I don't think, would do another another lopsided expansion. So you're going to bring in two teams at the same time. It's Seattle and then who? Kansas City has the arena ready to go. Kansas City can support another pro sports team, in my opinion. Some of it's going to be opinion-based. But it makes sense. The market is good. I think the fan base, at least for the precursors of it all, the fan base seemed real excited about it this week. Mm-hmm. It makes a lot of sense that Kansas City is as pro-ready as any team, as any city other than Seattle. You could throw out, like, St. Louis. Well, St. Louis just lost a team. And maybe there's a void to fill. But if you fail to support an NFL team in a market as well as the NFL wants you to, that's probably a red flag for the NBA.
And part of that, too, was, and not to get too far into this, but the Rams have an awful owner.
For sure.
Who was a Missouri native and stabbed his own state in the back.
Sure.
And he did the Cleveland Indians for Major League. He got them to lose so he could move.
And so, like, this is, there are layers and layers on that. But that's a city that I think the NBA looks at that, they're a little worried. Also, with the exception of Minnesota, and Minnesota is also kind of an exception in and of itself, there aren't many markets where the NBA and NHL directly compete.
Right.
Mid-sized markets.
Right.
Mid-sized markets. And Minnesota has every team everywhere. So that's the closest I could get with the Grizzlies and the Wild. Other teams that have other cities, more Kansas City level, usually get an NHL team or an NBA team.
Mm-hmm.
Like Pittsburgh is really interesting, but Pittsburgh has the Penguins, and that team matters in the winter.
Mm-hmm.
St. Louis has the Blues; that team matters in the winter. Kansas City has a void there. Like, oh man, are we gonna have the end of the King season overwhelmed by the start of the Royals? Probably
no.
not. Not in the next 5 years, certainly.
No.
And the Chiefs are going to be the Goliath here for the rest of time. Like the NBA team could be the LeBron Heat Big Three, and I think we'd be talking about Patrick Mahomes in the offseason.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, it makes sense. I think the spot is there, and if the NBA does want to expand two at a time, then it's Seattle, and then it's Kansas City versus Pittsburgh versus St. Louis versus, you know, five or six other teams.
Well, Josh, let me ask you a question.
Mm-hmm.
You're a young guy.
I am.
All of the NBA fans I know are my age, if not younger. We don't make any money. We won't be able to afford the tickets, so that's
gonna have to find the right price.
That's
points.
The problem with I think everyone being like, oh yeah, man, I'd go to every NBA game. Are you shelling out, I don't know, $10,000 for season tickets?
You say $10,000, and I just think like, what is that? Do people have
$10,000?
People do
in the bank.
No, I think that the NBA, the way it's growing right now, isn't just growing among young people. It's growing overall in a way that have that question to ask anywhere. Also, downtown Kansas City and Sprint Center is going to be able to serve enough young people. Maybe we're out there filling out the upper deck more so than the courtside
That's
seats.
Fine.
But that I think and that it, will fill out just fine.
And just to use myself as a test case, I'm older than both you guys by a few years. And I loved the NBA as a kid. Got away from it a little bit. Got back into it. My kids love it. So in terms of buying tickets, if they're affordable, I don't have an extra $10,000.
I was going to say this.
Brad, you don't have any money.
$10,000. Yeah, I don't need money. What's money?
Right, I was going to say it.
It's actually very valuable.
It's an obstacle. It's a thought. It's not even a thing.
I take back what I said about waiving my talent fee for the show earlier. I'm going to need a check, please. Mr. 10 grand.
But I'll go, I'll take my kid. I love the NBA. My kids are into it. So, yeah, we'll go watch together. I'm just about out of time. You got baseball tonight coming up?
I do. Talk about Danny Duffy most of the time.
Danny Duffy and they losing to the Yankees. Series finale today between the Royals and Yankees. So you've got baseball tonight at noon. At 1 o'clock, Sporting KC, Minnesota United. And then 3 o'clock, final whistle with Dave Borchardt. NBA tonight, Rockets and Warriors at 7 o'clock.
Also postgame.
Absolutely. Yeah, postgame. Yeah, whenever the Royals get done.
Full slate.
Thanks to Matt Derrick, Kurt Heelan, Josh Briscoe, our producer Jed Marshall. I am Brad Porter. You've been listening to Sports Sunday, Sports Radio 810, WHB.
This is